Welcome to the Dadpreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Oliveira. And today I have the pleasure of speaking to our guest, Sarah Phillips, and she is an educator who is going to share with us the various ways that she has learned in her experience as an educator, the different ways that adults can communicate better with kids. And we know that it's something so hard. Sarah and I were talking about this before the podcast, in that you have electronics and you have the different behaviors that we've adopted after COVID. So there's lots for us to unpack today, Sarah. Welcome to the podcast.
It is fabulous to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Alex. Being a teacher, obviously, I love anything that's going to support the kids. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, great. Well, let's start with your life experience. When did you start teaching?
I actually graduated with a degree in teaching when I was young and went to go get my first job and realized that it didn't pay enough for me to survive. So I had to go get a job in corporate America for a while, get my finances straight. And then I started teaching in 2003. And I was in the classroom for 14 years.
Oh, wow. 14 years. And what grades?
Everything from third through seventh grades.
Third to seventh grades. Public, private, charter?
I have not done any private. I did do public schools and charter schools.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Great. Well, you know, ever since COVID, I mean, those were 3 years that I think everyone wants to forget, except for, I think the remnants of what we all experienced are still there and people are contending with that. And as if that wasn't bad, as I was mentioning at the top of the show here, is the electronics, which is something we talk about a lot. Smartphones, gaming, social media, like there's so many different forces trying to consume our young minds. And I think it's really hard for not only educators, you know, teachers, but also parents. And everyone's just pointing at each other. And of course, we can't depend on the government or social media companies, tech companies, because they've only made it worse. So how do you approach that? Because, you know, in talking about communicating better with kids, what's like your... Like, give us some tips on how we can do that.
The biggest thing that I have found in communicating with kids over the years is to stop pretending like we're perfect. You know, as adults, we seem to think that we need to get up in front of the classroom or stand in front of them in the living room and act like we're perfect and we know everything. And no, they get to know that we're not perfect because we are the blueprint for them. And when we spend a life acting like we are perfect and we never make mistakes, that is the mold that they are trying to live into. And we all know that's impossible. We're not perfect. There was only ever one perfect person, you know, and it wasn't me. So I get to be real and authentic with them. I get to say, you know, I can remember saying to my kids at the beginning of every single school year, and I meant it. I was like, first of all, I want you to understand, I want you to make mistakes. I want you to make a lot of mistakes this year because it's the only way that we learn. And while we're on the subject, you get to give me grace to make mistakes too, because I promise you, I'm going to make them. I'm going to make a lot of them. I may make more than you. And that's okay, because we're all here together to learn. And it put us in a different relationship boundary to where they didn't feel like I was looking at them expecting perfection. And I didn't think that they were looking at me expecting perfection. We could be real and vulnerable. I think one of the biggest challenges that we've had in the world over many, many years is the inability to be vulnerable. And even though there are some not so great things about being online and being social media, one of the things that has occurred to me is that in some respects, it is a great blessing because people feel safe online in a way that they don't feel in person. So it allows them to be more authentic and be more vulnerable. And I think that's so important for our kids to see.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And that I think my big takeaway there, Sarah, and I'm just taking notes here, but encouraging them to make mistakes. Absolutely. And then just opening up and being vulnerable and letting them know that your journey is a lot like theirs in that sense, is that you're navigating through the different, I mean, because there's so many, I think when you're a kid, if you go back and you know, if our listeners right now can go back to when they were kids, and you think of being a student sitting in class, right? You didn't take into account that teacher or that, you know, the administration, and like, you don't really think of it in those terms that, oh, this teacher in front of me has to contend with not only 25 kids in this classroom, but it's also 50 parents plus the siblings plus the administration. Like, you don't really think, when you're a kid, you don't think of it that way, but it is quite complicated, which I think it's at your point in that you're only one person up there. And you're going to make mistakes because there are so many variables at play. And you teaching the curriculum is just one part of that whole thing, right? And then trying to understand what makes people tick. But I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, you know, what you just said there about social media, which I tend to agree with you. There's a lot of good that has come out of the you know, explosion of everything social and smartphones and whatnot. And of course, like even during COVID, being able to do, you know, online classes for a lot of people, that was great, but in some ways it set some kids backwards too. So mm-hmm. there's always two ways to look at it.
Yep.
So in talking about being more authentic, what age do you think personally, from what you've seen as an educator, what age do you think is appropriate for kids to be online, social media, for example?
I would say when they're in that end of fifth grade, beginning of sixth grade, I think that they have developed enough autonomy, because my experience with the younger kids, when they get on computers and they start that interacting in that other world, is that they don't have enough sense of autonomy of who they are and what they are, that they are so easily swayed. And let's face it, you know, there are some negative influences out there. And I think that before they get to that point of being exposed to people who are not great people, mm-hmm. that they get to have a really good, strong understanding of themselves.
And where do you place, you know, I think the challenge for most parents with safety is exactly what you said. There's a lot of bad people out there who sometimes they're putting out content that is obscene and very, you know, driven by clickbait, which is, we talk about this on the show, monetization. They don't really care who watches it and what the content's about. They care that they get the clicks so that Google and Facebook can pay them for every eyeball. They don't really care about what happens to those sets of eyeballs on the other end, as long as they make money. So everybody's got ulterior motives. The government has absolutely shown that they don't have the ability to regulate at the point where, you know, we're going to get great outcomes, you know. And even the companies themselves, like Facebook, and I mean, they've authored reports themselves with third-party auditors coming in and saying, yes, you know, what you're doing is you're allowing too many bad actors to get in front of these kids. So taking aside the educator, what do you think parents can do? Because I think what we talk about this on this show a lot, Sarah, is that most parents aren't really equipped. They don't really have the time or energy or know-how on how to create those guidelines. So What do you think, in your experience, parents can do? Because it's really going to come down to the parents, not the teachers, to police what apps are on that one student's smartphones.
Yeah. You know, so many times I have seen and heard parents who are trying to monitor and regulate all the time. And first of all, it's a task that you're never going to complete, because you know what, you can't, as long as you're not in their body 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, there's no possible way that you can regulate what they're consuming. What you do get to do is you get to provide them the framework, a powerful, positive framework through which to see the world. You know, I have recently gone through an experience. In fact, I just wrote a book that kind of highlights all of what I'm about to say to you. And it is a personal transformation that I went through. I grew up a very abused child. I grew into a very broken adult who felt that the world was not safe and that I was totally unlovable. And so we create our own reality. And in that reality, everything that comes in gets filtered through whatever trauma and experiences that we've had in life. Mm-hmm. So everything that came into me reinforced the idea that it was, the world was unsafe and I was unlovable. Literally everything. And so that was the reality that I lived in. Now, when I was young, I had I'm the youngest of eight children. I had a brother who's 8 years older than me. He and his best friend used to hang out at the house all the time. And, you know, he was like part of our family. And we grew up and they moved out. And James went away to the military, came home when I was 16, stopped by the house. I said, Michael's not here. You know, I can give you his address. He said, no, I came to see you. So he came in, we started shooting darts, playing whatever. And he said, I came home to tell you something. Okay. He said, I've been waiting for you to be old enough to tell you this. But I'm in love with you. Will you marry me? You get from someone who feels that they are totally unlovable. You could have knocked me off that dry, forget a feather. You could have knocked me off with a speck of dust. So I did what we do when we get in a position where we feel like the world is not safe. We push away. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. I was like, no, you know, I'm too young. I'm not going, you know, I'm going to college, everything I could think of. So anyway, he went away, never heard from him again. And I thought, see, you know, he just, I don't know what he, you know, he wanted to get laid. I don't know. I don't know what he wanted, but didn't think about him again. But then last summer, I know this is a long story to get to the point, so I apologize for that, but it's really, really important that we understand what the switch was. My brother had a stroke last summer, and his wife and I were talking, and she was thinking that talking with James might help him recover some of the memories that he lost. So I ended up, through a series of things, finding James, and I called him and I told him about Michael.
Okay.
And of course we were catching up, you know, you know, he's married, got kids, you know, what are my siblings doing? What's his brother doing? And he said, what about you? And I said, nope, never got married, never had kids. And he said, really? Which was kind of an odd response, but, you know, James was always a little quirky, so whatever. But we got ready to get off the phone. And I said, I'm so glad I found you. You know, it's really good to talk to you. And I think about you all the time. And he went, yeah, me too. And in that moment, my entire world shifted. Because what I heard was, not only did he love me when I was 16, he still loves me to this day. And as a result, I got off that phone and I was like, wait, okay, so if he can love me, then I'm lovable. And if I'm lovable, then I can love myself. And if I can love myself, then I can let God love me. And I spent the next 6 months, and the image that God gave me of this is this little child, this four-year-old child, with this huge toy box, taking out all the toys and looking at him and realizing that they weren't the toy that she thought they was all along. And it was me going through all the memories of my life. And I look and I say all of that to say that what happened in that moment is what I call the changing glasses. Because I had seen the entire world at that point through these red glasses. You know, if you looked at the world right now with a pair of red glasses on, everything looks red. If you change your glasses to green glasses, now everything looks green. Did the world change?
No.
No. The way you saw the world change. And that is the way that we equip our children to go online and be safe in a world that can be very unsafe, is that we create an identity within them that sees who they truly are through a place of love and value and not broken and discarded. Because it is the broken and discarded people that fall prey to those things. Mm-hmm. But when we instill in our children the ability to see themselves, that's why the vulnerability is so important. That's the key, is because, excuse me, if they don't get to see themselves as, if they don't get to see me as somebody who is vulnerable and makes mistakes, then they feel like they have to be perfect. And that story never gets to be what it should be for them to stand proudly in their own life. Does that answer your question?
It does. And I do love the story. I think it's a very, it's a beautiful story. And is this what you talk about in your book?
Yes.
And yes. Tell us the title of your book.
The book is called, Yeah, Me Too, What He Said That Changed Everything.
And was this the, you know, that moment where you connected back with him, with James, was that the moment that you thought, okay, now I'm unpacking all of this and understanding how to love myself. I've got a story to tell. I'm going to go write a book. And then you kind of, I like
because,
how you
talk. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's funny because it's a book that was in my mind for 20 years.
Okay.
It was always going to be called The Journey to Myself, because I went through, I can't tell you how much therapy, books, courses, coaches, whatever. And I always knew there was a book there, but it wasn't time. It was not until that moment in time that God was like, okay, now you're ready.
Right. What was, you know, this contrast of you not having been married or had kids, and then contrasting that with living in a family with eight siblings. Did that ever bother you? Because, I mean, if you have a big family, it's almost expected that you're going to also build a big family, right?
Yeah, it actually, and for all of my siblings, it did. I mean, all of my brothers and sisters have five or six kids apiece, you know.
Okay. So they made up for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. More than enough. But for me, it was, I lived in a family where my father was mentally, physically, emotionally, sexually, spiritually, and financially abusive. My sisters grew up to marry men who were very much the same.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so what I saw over and over and over again was this pattern of, why the hell would I sign up for that? No, thank you. I'm good all by myself. Mm-hmm. It was a door that I wouldn't even acknowledge that I wanted to even open. It was just like, nope, not interested. No, no, thank you. And I specifically, the few men that I actually had some type of relationship with in my life, I didn't realize it at the time, but I see now that I specifically chose men that were either physically or emotionally unavailable. I knew it couldn't lead anywhere. It was my way of keeping myself safe.
Wow. Did you know, pursuing a career in teaching and, you know, spending time with the kids all those years, Did that sort of fill that void for you? Did you feel like the kids were also your kids? You could put all that extra energy into them?
Oh, 100%. So and the fact that I didn't have children, you know, some people thought that I just didn't like kids. The truth is I adore children. They are the hope of our future. They are everything. And because of how broken I was afraid I would be a horrible mother and I didn't want to bring a child into that.
Now that's very painful.
Yeah. So I chose to take the love that I had for kids and pour it into the kids in my classroom and my nieces and nephews and, you know, the other children that are around me in the world. But yeah. Yeah, it was not an easy thing.
Well, I'm sorry you went through all of that, and it sounds like you really have embrace that vulnerability to come out and share your story, which I think is so important. But I would also say that, you know, it's been my experience. I think of like certain friends and people I've come to know in my life that sometimes it's not their parents or siblings, family that love them the most. Sometimes it is a teacher or a neighbor or someone else, you know? And so in that way, I'm sure that you, during all those years, you probably connected with a lot of kids who might have been in a similar situation as you.
Yes, yes, very much so. My heart was always different teachers are different ways, but my heart was always with that child that was the troublemaker.
Right, the lost souls.
Yeah, because I knew that the only reason that they were who they were was because there was so much dysfunction in their life.
Right. And you don't feel loved.
They didn't feel loved. They just wanted attention. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was my heart to give them that attention. And, you know, there were several children along my journey that I know without any shadow of a doubt that I changed the course of their life.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, that's really...
What a gift.
Yeah, that is such a gift. And so, you know, before we close out today's episode, and it's just been so beautiful to spend this time with you, I know our listeners will value your story, where you came from, but also, as importantly, how you figured out how to connect and communicate better with kids, you know, whether you're an educator or a parent, you know. So any parting thoughts that you have or insights or tips that you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I have realized is what kids want more than anything else in the world from us is they want us to be present with them. And so many times we think that sitting in front of them is being present, and it's not. How many times do we sit in front of another, and not just children, by the way, adults as well. How many times do we sit in front of another human being thinking about what happened last week, what's going to come after this moment, what's going on in the world, what do we do, you know, where are we going, what's going on with this project that I've got, and we're not really there.
Right.
We are off in another world. And I've learned some very interesting things about that. And that is that depression comes from living in the past, and anxiety comes from living in the future. Mm-hmm. And are we serving the person in front of us when we are either sitting in the past or the future? That we get to be fully present and allow them to feel like they matter enough for us to put the past and the future away, because I am a firm believer that that is where identity gets created. Mm-hmm. When you are surrounded by people who stop their world and just focus on you, you can't not understand your value.
I'm like taking so many notes here, Sarah. I have really, truly enjoyed the conversation with you, because I think for our listeners too, you've brought a different perspective to a conversation that is so important and obviously touches so many different people, you know, obviously adults, you know, parents, kids, teachers, and your insights, which you learned through your own experiences and through your pain. And obviously it feels, I'm sure for you, like writing the book and sharing your story with the world, it's so kind of you, but I think that I'm sure you've already realized that it's also very therapeutic for you, which I find out with many of our guests who have gone through very difficult things, and just getting out there and telling the story. I think more than anything, it's not just about sharing the insights, but I think that when you share your story, people who are in that place like you were can feel like they're not alone. And yes, kind of back to your analogy of the changing glasses, which is like you're able to see it from a different perspective, which then leads to more discoveries, and the more you know about yourself, I just love it. I love everything you've talked about here, Sarah. So thank you so much for being in the podcast. For our listeners who want to learn more about your book and the work that you're doing, what's the best way for us to find you?
There will be, it's not completed yet because the book will not be out until early 2024, but you will be able to go to the website, yeahmetoobook.com. Okay. And there will be information on there as to where and when to get the book.
Well, great. Well, we will follow your work in the book when it's out. And I so appreciate you being on the Dadpreneur podcast.
It was an absolute pleasure being here. I never thought I would be on a podcast called the Dadpreneur, but
thank
it
you.
Was in there. It was awesome. Thank you.